My name is Doris. I'm an alcoholic. My anniversary date is July 23rd, 1985. Grateful to be here. My group is the North Marietta Group in Marietta. I joined that group when I first got here, and I've been coming here ever since I got here. Anne Marie was coming to the Friday morning story meeting, and I started coming with her, and I think we've been here almost every Friday since. And I love it, and I love the people that are in the room. Story, experience, strength, and hope. My father was an alcoholic, but he wasn't a mean, nasty alcoholic, and I didn't really understand about what alcoholism could do to people until I came in the rooms and heard you all talking about things that had happened. But he was legless. I never heard him raise his voice, but he drank till he fell over. My mother couldn't keep vanilla anywhere that he could find it because he would drink it. So this one, you know, this was just how it was. And I was born in the middle of the Depression. He didn't have a job. They'd lost their house. They'd lost their only son. So things were really tough for them. And here comes a new baby. I mean, that really, and they were 40 years old. That really wasn't what they were planning on. I had three sisters. One's 14 years older than me, one 13, and one 9. So I was really the baby in the family. They've all passed away, but they used to say, when I grew up, they would say, "Doris, you're a nurse, what do you think?" And I'd open my mouth like this, and then they'd go on talking. So so this is what happens to the baby in the family, I think. Anyway, with the drinking, when I was old enough, I got the foam off of Dad's beer, and I liked it. And then when I was a little older, I got a juice glass full of beer, and I liked that. But I don't remember that there was a craving. I don't remember any feelings, because the feeling in the family was that Dad's problem was of his own making, that he didn't have the willpower not to drink. Alcohol was never blamed for what went on in the house. So as I say, he was just a falling down drunk. He's a calm man, great storyteller when he was sober. But his drinking, they talk about the family afterwards in the book, made my mother crazy. And she, very angry, because this is not what she thought she was going to be buying, and this is what happened to her. The Second World War came along, and she went to work. And I was kind of left to my own devices after school. I did go to somebody's house, but other than that, and that's a 9 year sister that was 9 years older than me. We just didn't get along. And mother's solution to that was that, oh, go to your room. So I became a recluse, that this was my answer to any time there was a problem. I would go to my room, and I would read. And I'd go to the library, and I'd come home with a stack of books. And that's what I did. So, and I carried that over into adulthood. We moved when I was 12, and that's when not fitting in really started in with me. I didn't know anybody. I didn't feel like I fitted in. Then I went off to a Catholic high school, and I really didn't know anybody there. And there was always that, gee, I don't fit in. But there was no drinking. And then my older sister's husband passed away, and she came home with her two children. And she was drinking. And she was fine. I didn't see any problems. And I thought, well, if Mag can drink, why can't I? So that was the beginning of the road for me. I was 19. She had a friend who... And they used to do all, they'd go to the theater, they'd listen to classical music, and I just thought that was just so wonderful. And I would go to their house, and I would eat shrimp and drink martinis and think I was just special. But that led to me getting drunk on martinis, and it changed my life. It really did. Things were completely different then, and that was my solution. Alcohol was my solution to the fact that I got myself into a mess. I didn't know how to get out of it. I wasn't talking to anybody, so I'll just have another drink. And that was the beginning. And that went on for a long time. And I didn't have hangovers, so I had no idea that I was really having a problem with alcohol. And that lasted until, how old was I? I don't know, in my 40s. early 40s, and the kids were pretty much grown. I had one daughter left at home, and I went to nursing school. So I went back and I took a refresher course, and I went to work at Boston City Hospital, and that's the hospital where people came when they didn't have anywhere else to go, and this was before Medicare and Medicaid, and there were no places for the homeless or for the alcoholics on the street, and they would come into the hospital to get dried out. And I didn't understand, again, I didn't understand, but I saw some of the side effects. I saw the DTs. I saw the gastric issues. But that had nothing to do with me. I didn't understand it. And this was a long time ago. And I hadn't heard of AA at that time. And I wouldn't have thought to go anyway because I wasn't really getting into a lot of trouble. But what I lost was me. Because at that, I still, here I am in college, I'm working, and I still didn't feel like I fit in. In fact, one of my classmates said to me, this was in our first year, she said, this was November, we started in August, and she said, I didn't even know you were here until just recently. I was so quiet, and I could stay so quiet. And part of it is I'd read about the alcoholic family, and one of the roles that children play is the ghost. And that's what I did. I stayed out of the way, kept my mouth shut, and they would say, oh, Doris doesn't talk very much. No, Doris doesn't talk very much because she doesn't want to get herself into trouble because of the drama. So that, you know, I finished college. I got married. I went to work. We were out in California. I came back to Massachusetts, and I got a job at Mass General. And I still, I apparently wasn't drinking enough because I don't really remember that I was having an issue. And I worked evenings because my husband was going to school. And that, I ended that and I had another child and I stayed home. And then we moved down to south of Boston to the Plymouth area. And I just kept on drinking. And my husband and I would go out and we would drink. And we'd have wine in the house. Anne Marie probably remembers more of this than I do. She had a front row seat to it all. And again, I didn't really realize it, but when I got into my 40s, I started having hangovers. So it began to come home to me that you've got a problem. But it, again, just the way we thought about my father, I thought about myself, you haven't got the willpower. You don't know how, you know, you're just, what's wrong with you? I would say that to myself all the time, this crazy head, what's wrong with you? And I didn't know what was wrong with me. So then I started with the social workers and the psychiatrists, and I went from one to the other. And the last one I went to, and I finally said, I think I'm having a problem on drinking too much. And she said, oh, well, just control it. Okay. So I tried, and it didn't work. And I was back at, I was at Mass General at this point, and a part of the floor was a rehab floor. And I was telling Kevin about it this morning. There was a man on the floor with wet brain. And he couldn't talk. He couldn't dress himself. He couldn't feed himself. He couldn't stand up. But that had nothing to do with me, even though I was having a problem with the hangovers and I was drinking too much. There was another man who had the esophageal varices that were bleeding, and I, you know, helped the resident put the tube down and put the ice in it and all, so I saw that. But that didn't have anything to do with me. And I was white-knuckling it. I remember one morning, one of the patients we had, he'd been a drug addict, and I don't know what happened to him. He got into an accident, and he ended up a quadriplegic. And I was assigned to him that morning, and I was feeding him his breakfast, and I was so hungover. And I, you know, he didn't say anything, but I can remember those eyes just looking at me. He knew. I wasn't kidding him. But these were the things that went on. And when I started, and I forgot to put this in there, when I started back to nursing, I bought this big medical surgical nursing book. And I didn't think of it until after I got into the program, but the first chapter I read was the one on alcoholism. So somewhere in the back of my head, my total denial, but it was there, that, yeah, there's a problem there. But it just gave the symptoms, the side effects. It didn't talk anything about recovery. This was, 1980-something, yeah, around there. So the white knuckling went on, and then when I got into the program, page 31 was the thing that did it for me. So this went on, and then they were closing the floor, so I thought, well, I'll get something closer to home. Oh, I have another story in there before I get to that. My husband worked in Cambridge, so he would pick me up at Mass General when we lived in Plymouth, which is about a 40-mile ride south. And we got maybe a quarter of the way out of Boston. And I'm going on and on and on. The negativity, the anger, the resentment, the people I worked with, blah, 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 blah. And I never said to him, how was your day? That didn't cross this self-centered mind. On and on I went. One time I got through with my spiel and he said, oh, it's pretty good. You stopped in Brightley. You usually keep this till Weymouth, which was the next time down, because we got Boston, Quincy, Braintree, then Weymouth, and on down to Plymouth. So, you know, he put up with all of this. But the thing was, he never said anything. Nothing. He never said a word to me. So it's kind of a well-protected drunk. Well, anyway, they were going to close the floor. So I thought, well, I'll get a job closer to home. And I got a job as the assistant director of nurses in a nursing home. And I walked through the door and I said to myself, this is the biggest mistake you ever made. But I had no tools and I didn't know what to do about it. And there I was. And two of my daughters were in college, so that I felt some responsibility there. And the control, it was almost impossible. And I'd make promises to myself. Well, I won't drink today. I never said I'll stop drinking. I won't drink today. But then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm back into the wine bottle again. Because I had gone from this one kind of booze to another. And then I said to myself, I'd be on call once in a while if there was a problem. And I would say, well, I won't drink the night that I'm on call. And I did. I went in there having drunk. You know, the progression of the disease is what I see when I look at it. It was slow. I call it like a fungus. It was just a slow progression of a mess. And things in my life, you know, at home with the family, as soon as each one of my kids got to be 18, gone. And I don't blame them. No, I really don't. I probably would have done the same thing if I had been able to. So I kept up this promise. I couldn't keep a promise to myself. And I heard this expression I love. I have a body that can't tolerate alcohol and a mind I cannot trust. So I couldn't keep up, you know, I just couldn't do it. So the last drunk wasn't anything spectacular. I had driven drunk. I never got caught. Came out of the bar. Oh, there's another story in there. In fact, this is the other thing. My husband has this thing about at our age, we're upright. I'm upright and I can drink or, you know, eat orally, but I've said to myself, I'm upright because at one point I came out of the ladies' room in a restaurant and went right out on the floor. So, yeah, I'm upright these days. I don't do that anymore. So, this last night that I drank, went out to drink, and in a bar that I had been in years before, but this is another way of trying to control it. Well, I won't drink there. I won't go to that place. I'll drink at home. I had a box of wine that was in the refrigerator for a while until one of Anne Marie's sisters decided she was going to thoroughly enjoy it. And then it went out the door. And that night, I had kind of like a gray out, I think. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I came to and I said, I can't do this anymore. And I had a niece in the program. She was one of the children that had come home with her mother when her father died. And she had a great life. She and her husband was in the program. And I had gotten to know her a little better after her mother died. So I called her at 4 a.m. because I knew by 4 p.m., no matter what I said to myself, I was going to be right back at it again. And she said, can you stay sober for 24 hours? I was a mess. I was so hungover. It felt so awful. I said, sure. You know, the ego, of course I can. I about died that day. I couldn't go to work. I was such a mess. And the next night, she took me to do my first meeting. And then the following night, she took me to another meeting. And that was the beginning. I haven't had a drink since. But this is when the people-pleasing kind of kicked in for my benefit, really, because when I came through the door, So she handed me a meeting list book and she said, if you want it, you go get it. She wasn't going to hold my hand. I had to do this myself. So this was on a Friday. So Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. By Monday, I was a crazy woman, and I had to get out of the house because I knew if I didn't, I would drink at home. So I got out the meeting list book, and I found a meeting in a couple of towns away, and they had a beginner's meeting, and I thought, and I had no idea. I thought, well, that's me. I'll go to that. So I didn't know where I was going, but grace of God, I got there, and I walked down the stairs, and they were setting the hall up. And they welcomed me and then handed me stuff to help them set up the room. I was like, oh, okay. And that was the beginning of my journey. And that beginner's meeting really saved me because I didn't like discussion meetings. I didn't care what anybody had to say. But this beginner's meeting was set up with questions and answers. Like, what's a threefold disease? And the old-timers would be at that meeting as well as new people. And there was no discussion about that. They would answer the question, a threefold disease is physical, mental, spiritual. And then they would explain that. Or what does HALT mean? And they would explain that. And it went around the room. And this was really good for me. It really came home when I had about 6 months. And I'm still at the nursing home. And something went on. And I didn't face it head on. And I don't lie. This is me talking to me. I don't lie. I mean, if you ask me a question, I'd probably tell you the truth, but my way of it was I just wouldn't be there when you want the question answered, so I was lying in another way. So, oops, train of thought's gone. Oh, I know. So I got home and I thought, I've got 6 months now and I'd heard enough, and I thought, oh my God, what have I done? So I called the supervisor at the nursing home and I told her, and she took care of it. But that was the beginning. That was another, you know, open my eyes about the character defects, some of them. And the knot in my stomach, that empty knot that I had for feeling the way I did. And then Christmas came along, and they were having a Christmas party, and they staff invited me to go. And I thought, well, that's a compliment. I'll go. So I had 3 months, maybe. And I went. And there was alcohol and stuff there. And I didn't pay any attention to the other things they'd said at that beginner's meeting, like have a plan, have a way to get out, go with somebody, call somebody. Didn't enter my mind. So there I am, and somebody said, open your mouth, and being the people pleaser that I am, I did, and they shoved in a piece of Harvey Wallbanger cake. I don't know, those of you who don't know what a Harvey Wallbanger cake is, it's the liqueur that they pour into a cake and then make a glaze with the Wallbanger in that too. So my mouth is full of alcohol. So there I am. I thought, well, I'll spit it out. And somebody said, she's going to spit it out. And I'm like this. So I go down the hall to spit it out, and the door to the bathroom is closed, and I'm out in the hall. I managed to get in there and spit it out because I had heard that too, you know, if it happens, because it does happen. To spit it out. So I did. And thank God for that. So that was, and then what did I do? I went to another meeting, a women's meeting. And it's just about Christmas time. And I am a nutcase. And they were talking about baking cookies for Christmas. And I wanted to rip somebody's face off. I could care less. In fact, one of the guys in the group, I'd walk in and he would say to me, and who are we angry with tonight? And he saved me. He really did. Just giving me a hard time made such a difference because it made me take a look at the problem I had with anger. Because I'd be going along and something would disturb me and I'd just be off. So I had to work on that. So the first year, I didn't do well. I stayed sober on the first half of the first step, and that's got to be the grace of my higher power. I don't know how I did that. I wasn't interested in a higher power. I was like, okay, put one foot in front of the other, they said. And one of the women who became my sponsor eventually used to say, if you get up before I did, you've got more sobriety than I have. And at that point, she had 10, 12 years. So just these little things that I would hear at meetings, and they said go on commitments, and that the way that they did it was one group would take a meeting to another group, and you'd you know, who out, maybe four or five people from our group would go to another group, and they would get up to the podium and they'd give a short spiel of what got them there and how things were. So I used to go to those. And, you know, time went on, but that first year was really hard. So it was, you know, the second half of the first step, well, it's them, it's that woman I work for, it's this, it's that, it's not me. I had to really get some time to look at my part in what was going on, and I didn't know anything about that. I was the victim, and I played that role for a long time, even after I got sober, you know, poor me. What is it? Poor me, poor me, pour me another drink? Yeah. So, you know, that group was really good to me. They saved my life. Most of them have passed away now. And my sponsor, when she would get up to get a medallion, she would always thank the people who went before her. And that's true, because I wouldn't be here without those people, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Giving me a hard time, because that was a tough group. They were mostly people from South Boston. One man in particular, I've never forgotten this, because I'd have the poor me stuff. And one of the women that I got close to in the group had been talking to him when she first came in, and she told a story on herself, and she said, I was talking to Maddie, and I was telling him what was going on, and he would give me a suggestion, and I'd say, yeah, but. She said, and then I'd give him another suggestion. He'd say, yeah, but. And she said, finally, I said, yeah, but. And he said, then suffer. You know? If I'm not going to change, if I'm not willing to look, I took it to heart, if I'm not going to look at what I'm doing and then I'm going to suffer, then suffer. Because I'm the only one who can change most of this stuff. I can't do anything about outside issues. I have another daughter in the program and a woman that she's friendly with, when she tells her sponsees that when they get up in the morning, make their bed, because it's the last thing they'll have control over all day. So, yeah. I think so. So that first year, I wanted nothing to do with a higher power. I didn't have any use for that higher power. That higher power scared me to death. So that's what I call the first year, the year of anesthesia, because I didn't know what I was doing. Just put one foot in front of the other. Just keep moving. Year two came along, and I'm more awake, and now it's okay, the second step. But a higher power is going to restore me to sanity. I'm not asking him for anything. Seriously, it was like, if I ask him for something, he's going to give me, my mother used to talk about pick up your cross. He's going to give me another cross. And it was like, I don't want one. Just stay away. I think back on all of that. I made things so difficult for myself. And that went on for a long time. Because I was insane. But I would go to a psychiatrist or a social worker, but I wouldn't admit that I had a problem with alcohol. I mean, there goes the ego again. And who's crazy? I'm crazy, but I don't want to admit that. What's wrong? And what is wrong with me? Oh, now I know what's wrong with me. Still wrong with me. So step three comes along. I was going to rewrite that. There's no way I was going to do that step. So it had God in it. Mm-mm. And then the fourth step, I did it by myself. Well, why not? I mean, that was my MO. So I sat down and I made out a list of resentments, and God was at the top of that list. And then my parents, and then my sister, and so I had picked a woman to be my sponsor, and I chose her. She didn't have much more time than I did, and not any more experience in the program than I had. I picked her because she was dancing around the room and singing and happy, and I thought, that's not me, so maybe it will rub off. So I, you know, after I wrote this stuff down, I talked to her about it, but it wasn't a real fourth step. It just was, I don't know what it was. And so I call, and I was seeing life and my behavior, whether I liked it or not. So I call year two the year of the glaring defect, because it was awful. And that year I went in for screening for bladder cancer, and I called my niece. Thank God for people in the program. And I said, I want to drink. If I've got cancer, what the hell? I may as well drink. And the next thing I know, the phone rang, and it's her husband, and he's just saying, don't do it. Don't do it. And these, you know, so these two people in the program picked up the phone, took time out of their work to call this drunk and say, don't do it. And I got through that day. So that was the beginning of all of this. The fifth step I did was a spell. Six and seven, yeah, I'm beginning to say, oh boy, these character defects that I really don't want to look at. The ego, the huge ego, and the resentments. I really had, as I said, I had to work on that anger and the resentments. I could get a resentment at the drop of a hat if you didn't do things the way I thought they should be done. I still have trouble with a judgmental attitude. But at least now when I catch myself, I can do something about it. So 8 and 9, I made out a list of people that I have. There's still somebody on that list that I don't know if I will ever see that person, that I need to make amends to. But I did with my children, but I don't think I did it right. I don't know. You have to ask Anne-Marie. But I tried. And then step 10, trying to work on that. Step 11, I jumped over that. I wasn't doing that. Step 12, God was going to come and get me. I was active in the group. I had 3 months, and they made me coffee maker. And I got there, and I'd never done it before, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was flubbing around. It wasn't ready when people came in, and I didn't know that alcoholics got upset when there wasn't any coffee. Well, I learned. So I did that. I was a treasurer. I had to have a year, and then I was the treasurer of the group. And I went on commitments, and I did those things and worked with other alcoholics. And I kept going to that beginner's meeting. There was something else, that the halt. I had it same around 6 months, and I'd been up all night, something at the nursing home. And then I had some errands to do, and it's 11:30 in the morning, and I'm sitting in a restaurant, my husband and I, and all of a sudden I wanted to drink so bad. And then I remembered halt. I was hungry. I was angry. And I was tired. And those three things kicked in. But again, thank God for that beginner's meeting, for the old timers that went to that meeting, so that I could hear these things that I needed to hear. So time went by, and I don't know, 10 years, I mean, here I am. I'm supposed to be better. I'm going to get a medallion. And now I have a different sponsor from the one I had before. And I said, oh, I'm not going to bother to get a medallion this year. And she looked at me and she said, it's not about you. That's not about me. Yeah. It's what people like her gave me. And she was my sponsor for 22 years. And she still sits right here and says things when I don't want to hear it. She was really sick. She had melanoma. She had total mastectomy, both breasts, and ended up with a melanoma. And I was trying to help her. She didn't have any children. Her husband was, he had some health issues, and he's a difficult man. And, you know, so I would take her to her chemo. I'd take her to shop. I'd do that sort of thing. And one day I came home, and it had been really hard, and I walked in the door, and I said to my husband, man, I could use a glass of wine. And then I said, when did I ever have one glass of wine? And he said, never. So, and he had never said anything to me at all. He's not an alcoholic. We drank together, but he could stop. This would drive me crazy. And after I got sober, the first little bit, he had a bottle of something in the cupboard, and I would check to see how much he had to drink. I mean, this wasn't about him. This was me. So, time went on, and slowly but surely, the higher power worked its way, back into my life. But my mind was just so crazy. And I was out at my daughter that lives in California, who's in the program. And she had a book on her kitchen table. And this is the grace of God, I think. How God works through people is what I began to learn. That this is how things happen. And it was called Everyday Zen. And I picked it up and looked at it. And it talked about meditation. So I thought, well, you know, I'm nuts. You know, let me try this. I'll see if I can't quiet my mind down. I think I lasted maybe 30 seconds the first time I did it. It was like, oh, my God. And I kept working on it and working on it. And I managed to get more time. But then my head said to me, this isn't enough. This is not enough. And I was looking at reading a magazine, and there was an article in it about a group called contemplative outreach, and they had a program for meditation called centering prayer, and you just sit. And I had trouble with that, and it was to sit for 20 minutes. So my mind goes nuts, and you pick a word, go back to the word, mind goes nuts again, you go back to the word. But I would find that after 20 minutes that I was feeling a lot better than I had been. And things would come to me, like, not last week, the week before, I had such trouble with the second step. And all of a sudden, in my head came acceptance. And they used to send me to read acceptance every time I opened my mouth. So I thought, so this is, do the second step. Don't analyze it. In fact, it says it in step two in the 12 and 12 about resigning from the debating society. So here I am. I've been all this time in the program, and light dawns. I mean, it's a progress, not perfection. So I said, that's all I need to do with the second step is just accept it. That if I find a power greater than myself, if I use the power that's in the group, that things are going to be okay. So, I mean, that really worked for me. I try to do the 11th step on a daily basis. And sometimes I can last the 20 minutes and sometimes I can't. But it's just a desire to put into it. And once I started doing that, then the second step fell into place. The third step fell into place. I wasn't afraid of God anymore. The God of my understanding as a child, who I thought it was his fault that Dad drank and Mother got angry and used to say the rosary and do all this stuff. And why didn't he make it better? He could have made it better. And he took my brother. Why did he do that? Is he going to take me when I'm 10 years old? You know, I have fear. And fear was something I never really thought of. It's more in my mind now than it used to be. Maybe it's my age. I don't know. But things are okay now. I'm still married to the same man. We're coming up on, what, 62 years? He's put up with me all these years. Somehow we've managed to survive. Due to him, probably mostly, than me. I tend to go off. And I still get angry. But it's not like it used to be. Now, because of trying to quiet my mind down, trying to live the program, the episodes of anger are very far between. They got further and further between as I went along. And each time that I got angry, I would ask for help. I didn't know who I was asking, but I just wanted it to go away. And I got a sense of humor back, because nothing was funny. And it would be like, what are you talking about? You know, all right, here. So things are good now. And where I am in my life at this stage, I was 49 when I got sober. I've got 34 years. You do the math. So here I am. And I'm in another phase of life, the aging process. I forget things. I don't see things. But I can, and what I said to the doctor when I said, I'm having trouble with short-term memory. And she said, can you balance the checkbook? And I said, yes. So she said, you're all set. So I can still balance the checkbook. So I'm okay. But it's a struggle. It's a new phase of life. And the short-term memory is a pain in the neck. And the long-term memory is that gets better. Is bringing back things I really don't want to think about. So now what I work on, right back in the very beginning, a day at a time. I'm here today. I'm upright. Life is good. Anne Marie's in my life. I have contact with my other children because there was a time when I really didn't. And again, I don't blame them for that at all. Everybody else in my family is gone. I'm the last one. So the drama is gone. The family afterwards, I remember after Dad died, the craziness still went on. It's gone for the wrong reasons, but because I have another way of living. So I think I'm done. Really done. So anyway, I thank you all for listening, and I'm grateful to be here, and it's all 9:15, so I can turn it over to you guys. If anybody has anything they want to say, feel free. Thank you.